You can come up with any idea, but can you get that thing into reality? That's the real trick.
Hi, everyone. Welcome and thank you for joining me. My name is Franco Variano, and I'll be your host for the Tech Plus Art podcast. Tech Plus Art is the community for curious individuals and creators who are looking to make a dent in the universe. Together, we're exploring the new frontiers of creativity, humanity, and how emerging technologies will continue to shape our culture, professions, products, and much more. Join me on this journey as we speak with artists, makers, researchers, designers, and creators from all backgrounds and fields. Tech Plus Art is an inclusive community, and we make all our content for you. So we want to hear from you. If you've got any suggestions, topics you'd like us to explore, or contribute to yourself, let us know on Twitter or via the website. You can check us out at maketechart.com or at maketechart everywhere else. So with that said, let's get to today's episode. Today we're speaking with Travis Curtin, the founder and director of Flow, a powerful animation tool that generates code. Travis has had an extensive career in the creative technology space, working at pioneering institutions such as the Ars Electronica Future Lab and the Banff Center for the Arts. Previously, Travis built C4, an open source creative coding framework for artists and designers. He is also a principal at Logic and Form, a studio that designs and builds interactive experiences. We had an incredible conversation about some of the challenges surrounding the type of work that can be done with creative technology, his path through the industry building C4 and now Flow, and much more. So let's get started. Hey, Travis, thanks so much for being on the show today.
No problem. I'm looking forward to having a chat.
Yeah, likewise. Really looking forward to learning a lot about you and all the things that you're up to. But before we dive into all of that, like, can you tell us some more about yourself? Like, where are you from and what was it like growing up?
I'm Canadian. I'm from Canada. I was born in Winnipeg. I grew up there mostly until I was 15 and then moved out to Vancouver. While I was there, as a young kid, I was, you know, always interested in math and sports. Played football, played water polo. I moved out to BC with my parents when I was 15 and just sort of like tried to do all the same things that I was doing in Winnipeg, but new friends, new community, things shifted a little bit. But I was always still interested in the same things. And from a young age, like I mentioned before, I was interested in math and chemistry and physics and sciences and stuff like that and playing sports. That's basically where I grew up.
That's really cool. And so at what point did, you know, interaction design and creative technology kind of creep into your radar and become a thing?
It actually took a long time. When we were growing up, we had a computer at home. My parents bought like a PS2, I think it was, like an IBM computer, when we were fairly young, still living in Winnipeg, maybe when I was like 10 or 11 or 12. I can't remember exactly, but I never really got into it. I used it a bit from time to time to do, you know, typing things out and making reports and printing out on like dot matrix printers and things like that. But it wasn't until I was 22 where I decided that after pursuing math and chemistry for a long time, and I'd been accepted into this advanced chemistry program at a university in Montreal, that I decided that this wasn't what I wanted to do. And I just didn't go. And I didn't know what I was going to do. I think I canceled going out to Montreal like a week before the semester was supposed to start or 2 weeks before. And then just sort of spent a couple months trying to figure it out. And by chance, I was introduced to a program that had just started in BC. They had just started the previous September at a new university called Tech BC. And it was a really interesting program. I was looking at it and it blended. There was three streams. There was a stream of business, a stream of technology, and a stream for art. And the program was called Interactive Arts. This is the one that I wanted to do. And it mixed all kinds of stuff. Math, science, computer science, business. And there were even courses like photography and drawing. I think the one that caught my eye in particular was called Kinesthetic Space. And it was just about learning how to think in new ways about space and the body and movement. And this blend of all different kinds of learning was really interesting to me. And so I signed up and I started that program when I started that program when I was 22. And the first year I actually didn't even have a computer when we started it. And then I ended up buying my first computer when I was 23. And then I started learning how to do basically everything then. Started programming at that point.
That's super cool. And so I know you've built like a ton of amazing things over the years, and it's all culminated with Flow, where you're currently the CEO. So before we dive into some of the other stuff, like, can you tell us about Flow and what it's all about? What motivated you to create that product?
Yes, you're right. It is a culmination of all the other things. So Flow is an animation tool that lets you import a sketch design, move layers around, animate them, and then export to a variety of different languages. So you can export to iOS or HTML, JavaScript, React, SVGs, movies, all that kind of stuff. And the idea, the general like sort of high level philosophy behind it is that as an artist or as a designer, as a creator, I shouldn't have to worry about programming all these complicated little nuances. And the tool should figure out how to help me do that. Not in a way where today there seems to be this new kind of trend toward no code. And I have been thinking about this for quite some time. And that doesn't really fit into my philosophy behind Flow, but what it actually is as a creator, I always thought that it was important for me to understand programming, for me to understand the medium that I was designing for or creating for. And so this is one of the motivations that I had to learn how to program. And for years, I believed that artists and designers should learn how to program, especially if they were doing designs or they were making things that were for, you know, interactive technology, software, anything dynamic. After a few years, I realized too that that wasn't really the core thing that I was trying to get to. That wasn't really the core idea, is that forcing people to learn how to program so much as it is like the tools that you're using should allow you to express yourself in the medium that you're creating for. This is one of the high level ideas behind Flow. And today, yes, it's an animation tool. You can move things around, animate them, and export them to any language. And that's just like the sort of first step expression of that sort of philosophy and that idea.
That idea as the culmination of what you've done over your career, maybe diving below the surface as to like how you got there, I should say, like you also run a design marketing agency called Slant and a studio called Logic and Form, which looks like it's created some pretty unique projects over the year. Can you tell us more about the type of work that you've done in the latter agency, unless you want to talk about both?
Yep, for sure. So I'm a partner in a company called Slant Design and Marketing. And as you're right, it's a design and marketing company. Two of our partners are really quite strong in doing design and branding for food products. And that's like one stream of what Slant does. And then the other stream is taking some of those ideas and making them into digital, like websites and doing digital advertising and stuff like that as well. When I joined Slant as a partner, it was mainly because I had been contracting with them for about a year, and I was working on projects that were these interactive apps. I mean, every app is interactive, but the idea behind the apps that I was working on were they were supposed to be these presentation, these super high quality fidelity demos. They look really good. They're very, very interactive, very, very animated. And we were producing those for SAP. And so I had been working on that for such a long time. And there was like a steady stream of this that the other partners at Slant invited me to become a partner there. And the main reason why I was doing that is because the tool that I was using was called C4, which is this open source API for artists and designers to learn how to program easier. Very similar in a lot of respects and actually informed by processing and open frameworks and other earlier and really quite popular creative coding APIs. But I was using my own tool and I was able to produce these things really fast. And so this is why they brought me on. Over the years, I started getting some opportunities. I started writing grants to build out some really interesting interactive artworks. And so we got those and we were doing those. And we decided that this work is very separate from the traditional like food branding and marketing and packaging stuff. So we just created a moniker around the work that I was doing at Slant and we called that Logic and Form. And so that's what that studio is.
That's super cool. And so you mentioned C4 there, which is an easier way to learn to program for designers and artists. Can you tell us like, well, I guess you kind of mentioned like it was processing that inspired it, but like what made you create that library or that tool set or framework first?
It's a great question. So about that time when I said that bought my first computer, started learning things, I started learning JavaScript a little bit, but not really. The main thing that I was working in was Flash. From Flash, I graduated to ActionScript and I started using ActionScript as like this medium for exploring some ideas around all the projects I was doing in school. Very soon after learning that and pushing it to its limits, I realized that the Flash player was something that wasn't strong enough or it wasn't powerful enough or it was just too slow to do the things that I was trying to do. So I started looking for new ways of expressing. And then John Maeda's Design by Numbers, I started learning that in one of my courses and I sort of progressed from there into using processing, which was fairly new at the time. And I started making all these projects in processing. And then there was a point where I started to run up against the limits of processing where I was trying to do things and processing was actually being quite slow. And so I shifted again. I made this other shift into open frameworks because it was a little bit faster and you could do other things. And by the time I started pushing up against the edge of open frameworks, I was starting to get this feel for like what it was I was really interested in doing. These things and using computer and tech as this medium to allow me to do these really expressive projects. And this also was sort of coincided about my time when I was working at a place called the Ars Electronica Future Lab, where we were building all these like crazy interfaces. One of the things that I found at the Future Lab that wasn't there or wasn't really in place was like a reliable go-to framework for building interfaces on top of whatever else you wanted to have. And I really thought at the time that they had needed to build their own set of like interactive elements, components, and move away from what they had been using for a long time, which was okay, but it wasn't really, I don't know, gorgeous, if that makes sense. The bottom line is I was working at the Future Lab, and sort of at the end of my time there, I was realizing that it would be really cool if the Future Lab had its own custom interface development environment where they could like say, here's a button, here's how you animate it, here's how you could move things around, and really create something a little bit more flexible, a little bit more gorgeous, and a little bit more robust than what they were using, which was a system called Juice, J-U-C-E. And so I had that idea and then decided to come back to Canada. And I sort of shelved that idea for a little while. But I had always thought, you know, it'd be really cool if there was this like really robust framework for doing and building UI. I ended up moving to the BAM Center and doing an internship there for about a year and a half, which was awesome. And just got to work on whatever I wanted. And after having thought about processing and open frameworks and the things that I was trying to do, there was this new project I wanted to create where you could use a gesture to lay out typography. And so you could paint with letters. And the typography systems I found in open frameworks and processing couldn't handle the kind of computation and rendering that I wanted to do. And I needed to learn something else. And so I had a couple of options and I started reading all the documentation for C++ or a couple of other different frameworks and decided that I was going to start learning how to do Objective-C because they had this really powerful, this Cortex framework that I could use. I ended up learning Objective-C so deeply that I thought, you know, it would be really awesome if we could take the power behind this idea of layering and rendering that was in the Mac OS operating system and bring that into something that was similar to processing in open frameworks, bring that into a new kind of creative coding language because it wouldn't render at 30 frames a second. It's not redrawing all the time, but it had this really beautiful way of layering and putting animations inside different layers. And then you can mix the layers and there's all these new aesthetics that could come out of something like this. And so I started moving down into building C4 for the first time, mainly so that I could do my own experiments, but also because there was this, it wouldn't be just a replication of these other creative coding APIs that were out there, but it would actually bring something new to the whole environment. That was one of the motivations. And so that's where C4 started. And then over the years, you know, I made it for OS X. I made it and made it again and just kept iterating on it. And then at some point, I was sitting with a friend in Calgary in the middle of January or February, and it was snowing out. And some guy came into the bar that we were sitting in with a cowboy hat and a pair of shorts, and he pulled an iPhone out of his pocket. And my friend looked over and was like, that's why you need to build this for iOS, because even that guy has an iPhone. So it went from an OS X thing into like an iOS specific API. And then this is where I started building more and more interfaces for iOS and for iPads. And this sort of then bled into the work that I was doing at Slant and continuing to build things at Logic and Form. And then eventually that all informed all of that stuff, everything since like that very early on in 2002, 2003, all of that's been informing Flow.
So like, how did that tie into Flow? Like, because now you're focused on animation for Sketch. Is C4 still around? Are you still using part of it? Or
I haven't used it for anything in quite a long time. I used it a lot when I was doing Logic and Form stuff. One of the last projects that we did at Logic and Form was really, really complex. Ended up not being iOS-based, even though we had originally envisioned this really interesting like iOS-based interaction system. It ended up being a Mac-based installation. And so there was no real need to use C4 in that one. But the idea, the general idea of here's an API that's easier to learn, like processing in open frameworks, but for iOS, that would allow people to create and envision and create in that medium, think in that medium. That is still the underlying principle behind C4. With Flow, the step beyond C4, which requires somebody to go and learn how to program, is that Flow is just an interface that wraps all of those ideas where you don't actually have to learn how to program anymore. It's one of the things that we had found, or I had found over the years, that was like difficult sort of to get over that hump of getting more and more people to be using our API, was that there was just fundamentally people who just had creative ideas, but didn't want or didn't need to learn how to program, and so they wouldn't. So how do you take all those ideas and wrap them into something that allows for the expression in the medium, but without having to learn how to program? And that's what Flow is.
That's super interesting. And so over your career creating all these different apps, installations, technology platforms, what has been the most ambitious project, I guess, to date? Like, and where does technology and creativity fit into the workflow there in terms of blending those two things together, whether it is to do an installation, whether it is to do an app? How do you approach merging those two things?
This is kind of a banal answer, but it has to happen all at the same time. I mean, you have to have expertise in understanding the hardware that you're going to be using as a medium. You need to have an expertise in understanding the software that you're going to use as a medium. And then you have to have an expertise in, it's not even an expertise. I don't know if it's intuition or expertise or just experience in being able to realize an idea through these other technological mediums. You can come up with any idea, but can you get that thing into reality? That's the real trick, is understanding, yes, it's possible at some level, whether I'm an expert in iOS or I'm an expert in macOS. I also understand how to use cameras. I also understand how to program. It's hard to explain because I don't really tend to put it into words, but let's look at this last project that I did for Logic Inform. We built an installation for the Residential School History and Dialogue Center at the University of British Columbia. It is made up of three 100-inch multi-touch displays whose graphics and interactions are all linked to one another. There were a lot of challenges with this project, but two really stood out. First, due to the nature of the subject matter, we weren't in a position to curate or put forth a narrative, whether or not there was good intention. Essentially, the stories within the data we were presenting were not ours to tell. So we needed to design an interaction and aesthetics in a way that would engage people to explore the content and easily create their own narrative threads. At the same time, we also needed to let the content speak for itself. Moving between documents needed to be quick, diving into an image or playing a video needed to be easy, and the associated links between things needed to be relevant and decipherable. And that's difficult for the same reason as a search bar in your favorite browser isn't really a great method for understanding a subject matter. People could easily get lost in looking for information and fumbling around a bad UI, rather than learning from and developing a new understanding while moving through the content. The second was the more difficult of the two, and was actually one of the original challenges proposed by the client. Due to the nature and history of the subject matter, one might say that the majority of the Canadian public had never before had access to much of the data being presented through the installation. The challenge was this: to design an experience that would, within 30 to 60 seconds or less than a minute, provide a visitor with an aha moment where they learned something new, they saw things in a way that they hadn't seen before, and it would cause them to continue thinking about what they'd learned long after leaving the center. A major purpose of the installation was to open up people's minds, perceptions, and intentionally leave them with lingering questions about what they learned so that they would come back to it, talk about it, and essentially open up new dialogues about it as well. And that was a really tough challenge. I mean, every aspect of interaction and experience design needed to come together seamlessly with the display, the aesthetics, and the technology. I mean, the responsiveness of the hardware at that point is crucial, because if anything gets in the way of that aha moment, an interaction issue, a bit of lag, poorly presented content, bad typography, you lose the opportunity to engage with that visitor. You have such a small window of time. And in that sliver, if anything is off, they might walk away thinking more about that poor interaction than anything else. Now, aside from those two things, there was an incredible amount of other difficult challenges along the way. For example, we had to invent our own multi-touch system because one doesn't exist on macOS. We had to add some significantly difficult math and programming to get Apple Maps to work in a very unique way. We had to advise on data structures and methods for curating relationships between documents that the curatorial team was producing. Styling the maps was a really great challenge, and we had to use some really old software to get it done properly. We even found a performance bug inside of macOS that was so deep and nuanced that people at Apple support thought we were an internal team working for the company. And there were other things too, but in a nutshell, that was it. And that was a tough but ultimately rewarding project to be a part of.
And at the onset of that project, were you guys aware of that? Like, did you have that expertise or that curiosity to know that, like, hey, without multi-touch, this fails? Or is that something that, you guys said, yeah, we'll do the project. And then as you're going along, you're like,
it's definitely more the latter. We had proposed doing this like more complex system where you could like have iPads and walk around a room. Each person had their own iPad that they could go and they could explore on. And so what we pitched was very different than the final form of the installation. So we actually had to figure all that stuff out on the fly.
Yeah, that's an insane challenge to have to manage. And I'm assuming that at that point, the budget's already been set and you guys just have to make it happen.
Yeah, that was definitely an ambitious and very, very difficult project. Is it the most ambitious project I've done in terms of Logic Inform? Yes. C4 is fairly ambitious. Flow is also ambitious, I would say, as well. I would probably put the Logic Inform project and Flow both sort of in the same category.
And so in terms of maybe switching to the business side, in terms of positioning the value of all of those details that you talked about, plus like all the technical challenges that the ultimate experience that you want to sell and have people kind of enjoy and experience and understand, how do you position that value? And especially if there's, you know, emerging technology or something that nobody's ever seen, how do you sell that to people?
Yeah, it's a good question. It's generally not an easy thing to sell, because if you don't do it properly, it can always come off as like, oh, this is just some frivolous thing that somebody wants to build. And, you know, we don't see any value in it, so we're not going to spend the money on it. Because this kind of stuff is all, everything you're building in this sort of field is a prototype, in my experience. Everything. Before this, I'd never built a multi-touch wall like that. So we had to invent it as we were going along. And other people have made multi-touch walls before, but the particular nuance of the needs for the installation and the experience, those are all new. And so we had to address those, and then basically build something from scratch. Working on some other installations, everything is always from scratch. And so selling that invention is difficult, because invention takes time and you don't know how it's going to turn out. It's always easier when you're responding to a client that wants it. With the project at IRS HTC, at the end of the day, I think one of the things that helped us in winning the contract or winning the bid was that we were very honest in thinking through what it was they were trying to say in the RFP, understanding the nuances in technology and ways that we could go and answer that, and basically telling them, I have an idea for what you might want, but I definitely know that you don't want all these other things, and you don't want them because of X, Y, Z, and just being very honest in my presentation with them about that. Like, for instance, we could have made this like proposal that had these like crazy interactive systems where you're like swiping and moving and using camera vision and all that kind of stuff. We could have invented some other new sort of cutting edge experience, but for the particular project, those things were not the right solution. For this particular project, we had to eschew all these other ideas and focus only on the experience of the people who are going to come and use it, and how to get the idea across in a way that was reliable and communicative. And if you have all these other experiences, these things that you're trying to build, these cutting edge technologies, they could often fail, and then they just get in the way of the experience. And so what we needed to do is we needed to just get rid of all of that stuff, any possibility of failing technologically, remove all of that, and then just focus on like crafting the experience from there.
That's super interesting. On the other side, having done those types of projects, I should say, and now building tools for other creators to empower them and understand like what are the limitations, what would they want? How do you balance those two things of needing to invent in certain situations because of the details of a project, but also needing to remove all of that fluff, but also staying cutting edge? How do you balance that stuff into a tool like C4 or Flow?
C4 in that respect is a little bit easier because it's an API and it's open source and it's meant for people to just come and learn. We give them the possibility, we give them tutorials, we teach people how to do it. It's relatively a self-service community-based model, the other APIs that are out there. That one was relatively easy to determine from that respect. There was lots of little technical things along the way that we would have to choose to do, like always trying to balance ease of use versus like power. You know, at some point we had to have these longer discussions about how we were going to create animation blocks or something inside of the API. And the way that we're doing it needs to be really, really easy. It can't just be like a technical thing because it's easier technically. You always have to balance sort of feeling, understanding who you're building and designing for versus like the technological power. With Flow, it's a little bit different. Everything that I just was talking about is still very valid. Like, it needs to be easy to use. It needs to be powerful. If we're going to export code to a particular platform, it needs to be readable. It needs to be native. That's one of the things that we really firmly believe. It needs to be native. It can't be run by some third-party software. But again, it's always understanding who you're designing for, who you're creating for, what you're trying to express, and then balancing that against technical limitations or technical inventions. And I know that that's not like a clear answer, but I don't think it's ever been a clear answer for me either.
Fair enough. And how long were you working on C4 and how long have you been working on Flow?
So I started C4 the first iteration was in 2010. And that was like the first challenge I had with that was, can I replicate processing? And then iterated on that a little bit. And then slowly started bringing more and more of this, what I mentioned earlier, this layering approach to rendering. This more sort of native stuff that came out of macOS. Started bringing that more and more in. And then just iterated year after year with that. I think we started the iOS version in 2012, and then we continued working on C4, updating it, making examples, using it in Logic and Form, and using it in our own projects until shortly after we started making Flow. We started working on Flow. It was originally called C4 Studio in late 2015. So it's been just over 4 years that we've been working on that. And there was sort of this bridge where we were working on Flow and C4 at the same time. And we started having discussions about, like, what is the future of C4? What is the future of this programming API, this creative coding API? We had lots of discussions about whether or not we were going to base the sort of core architecture of Flow on C4. And that one, we went back and forth with that for a long time. And we ultimately decided that anything that we would do with Flow moving forward would come out of all the experimentation and all the invention that we are doing inside of Flow. And so we started focusing entirely on Flow. C4 has been around. We've been maintaining it. And a lot of people have been using it, which is really fantastic. But we haven't really dedicated a ton of time to bringing it up to speed. We've only been focusing on Flow for the last 3 or 4 years.
So when you take a look at the creative technology landscape, whether that's for, you know, generative art, installations, mobile experiences, web experiences, what do you feel like is missing in the industry at large? Is it C4? Is it Flow? Is it more?
I don't think it's missing anything like C4. There's lots of creative coding APIs. Since I started this stuff, there's just been this explosion of really beautiful works that just keep coming from everywhere. So I'm not so sure that it's missing anything in terms of that. In the direction that Flow is going right now, you know, there's this gap in like design production or modern app production or, you know, website production or even like modern interactive art production, where getting this creative idea out into reality is really, really difficult. And I think that there's two camps of philosophy on this. On the one hand, a lot of people believe that it's really just a matter of education, of being able to express yourself and communicate, but also understanding the other side of the story. So as a artist or as a designer, understanding the programming side, or as a developer, understanding the design side. And one of the philosophies is, or one of the main philosophies is, if a designer knows how to program, they can speak to developers and they can communicate more easily to developers. And they don't have to write the software, but at least they know it. And then from a developer perspective, the developer understands design, whether or not they've studied it, but they understand it. Then they can speak to designers and then they can have this more fruitful conversation and they can get past some of these barriers of like getting the creative idea into production. So that's one. And then another one that I've been thinking about for quite a while is, it's not just that, but it's also the tools themselves need to be able to communicate. And if the tools aren't communicating to one another, if the tools are based in fundamental philosophies that are different from one another, then it doesn't matter how well a designer can speak to an engineer, you're still going to lose. You're going to lose all this nuance and all this creative expression because it's so difficult to reproduce. And this is what we're trying to do with Flow. So Sketch or Illustrator or any design tool is created in a way that is more open, allows for creative freedom, allows for flexibility, allows for quick, rapid iteration. Whereas on the other hand, something like Xcode or Visual Studio or development environment is really tuned to be rigid and unforgiving to help you produce software the best way possible so that it can be stable, so that it works, so that there aren't any bugs. And these fundamental different philosophies of openness versus rigidity, they clash. And if the tools themselves can't bridge, then it's still, you're not going to be able to get past that gap in any kind of fruitful way. If you can get the design tools and the development tools to start speaking to each other underneath the hood, then all of those other discussions that you have between designers and developers, all of that education and everything else, it just makes all of that easier and more seamless. And you start to shift the balance of like, where does creative production happen? Does it happen only in the mind of the creator or the designer and then just gets handed off to a developer so that it becomes reality? Or can you shift that balance of like production onto the designer side or the creator side and then have like implementation and all that other stuff be balanced across both the disciplines?
So maybe kind of coming back to, you know, the beginning of the conversation, you mentioned going to TechBC and taking this program that was, you know, a mix of these three things like business, technology, and art. Where do you think this whole industry is headed? Do you think it needs more programs like that? Do you see more programs like that kind of showing up? How is the blending of those three unique elements? Because I feel like that was fairly ahead of its time. Yeah. How do you see the rest of the industry evolving?
Yeah, I totally agree. I think that program was ahead of its time as well. I'm biased, but I think that the way that we learned how to build for all of this field was really unique. And I think that definitely needs to be more programs like that. Recently learned of one, I think in Berlin, there's a program at one of the universities there. But I haven't seen a ton of programs that really take these like core groups of people from different mindsets and then not force them, but like require them to work together across a variety of different projects over the course of 4 years from many different disciplines. I think that one of the real strengths that we as a cohort came out with was the ability to communicate and understand and work in teams, which is something that I think is really, really important. I think more programs like that are important moving forward. where is the rest of the industry going? Often, you know, this is actually one of the questions that I've been thinking about prior to the interview, and I have no idea. Like, I have no idea how to even begin in that direction, because I've seen it come along from the very early days of creative coding and creative expression with software and stuff like that. And even when I started, it was late into the field, I feel. But it's just matured so much in the last 15 or 16 years that it can just continue going the way it is. And that's fantastic. More people learning about this stuff, more people experimenting. Hardware is getting easier and easier to not only access, but learn how to program. More programs, more APIs, more ways of producing are popping up. It's just becoming so rich that I think it's just going to continue this way. And people are just going to get more and more used to technology as a medium for expression, especially in the traditional art community. And it's just going to get easier and easier for people to express themselves, I think. Express themselves not only like, you know, on an individual level, but even just representing their ideas, which is really cool. Early days, it was very difficult because when we started, there was no Arduino. When we started processing, it just started like a year or two or maybe three before I started learning how to program. And those were just early days. And it was very, very difficult for someone to even get like a rectangle on the screen and touch it and move it around. And today it's so much easier. The medium is so much more fluid, so much more easier to get into, so much more mature that I think it's just going to end up being richer and richer in the future. But I have no idea which direction it's going to go.
That's what's exciting, I guess.
Yeah, for sure.
And so if somebody was just getting started, like what would you point them towards? You spent all that time learning all these languages, doing all this stuff, but would you advise the same thing or where would you point people to go towards?
I would not advise the same thing. Not because it's not worth it. Somebody might want to go ahead and do the same thing, but it's just a different landscape now. It's a different environment now. And so they don't need to go down the same route. I think it's really important moving forward is if you're just getting into this industry, is to think about what's interesting for you and then just pursue that. Don't give it up. Because if you're just pursuing that, that's when you're going to be the most creative. That's when you're going to be the most interested, the most creative, the most productive, when you're just pursuing things that you really, really, really enjoy. And I'm not saying sacrifice, like pursue it to the point where you're like, you're sacrificing absolutely everything else, because you can find this balance between needing to work and generating cash and, you know, having a business and being able to support your life, but also doing those things. You can do that. I think that was one of the things at an early age I didn't really understand so much. I ended up focusing really on just pursuing the ideas without trying to find balance anywhere else. But I would say figure out what you want to do, figure out who you are, figure out what you're passionate about, and then figure out how to find that balance and then just run with it.
Absolutely. I couldn't think of a better way to end the episode than on that message. Travis, thanks so much for taking the time to chat. I really, really appreciate this.
And I really appreciate you reaching out and asking me to be on the podcast.
Thank you for joining me for another episode of Tech Plus Art Podcast. We're a very small team behind this project, so we greatly appreciate all your support. If you love our content and these podcasts, consider leaving a review on Apple Podcasts and sharing it with a friend or two. This really does go a long way in helping us get discovered and reach more creators. As always, you can find us online at maketechart.com or at maketechart everywhere else. See you soon.